ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
This is what the problem now is. This seems to be a more serious rupture in the coalition, part of the broader, I guess, fracturing and realignment, if you like, of the right of politics in Australia.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
We're back with Insiders on Background for 2026. And this year, we're again trying to use this pod as an opportunity to dive a little deeper on one particular issue. It might be the big issue of the week that we will be discussing on the couch on Sunday, or it might be something that didn't get the attention it deserved amidst all the noise, but still matters. And look, we try to talk to people with real-world expertise. This week, we're looking at the plans to rein in the growth of the NDIS by setting up a new set of supports to be called Thriving Kids. It's for children with low to moderate needs, but many families are still puzzled and concerned about how this will work. This week, the final report of the Thriving Kids Advisory Group was released, and we're going to talk to the professor who led this work for the government. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Well, Professor Frank Oberclade from the Murdoch Children's Research Institute co-chaired the government's Thriving Kids Advisory Group alongside Health Minister Mark Butler. He is an internationally recognised researcher, author, lecturer on paediatrics and is especially interested in prevention and early intervention. Professor, welcome.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
So the big question to start with, what is Thriving Kids? How would you explain this?
Well, it's what we would regard as a long overdue effort to reform the NDIS for kids. I think professionals and certainly parents were becoming increasingly frustrated with the NDIS for kids. It just didn't work for lots and lots of reasons. The main one was that parents or children needed a diagnosis in order to get treatment.
Which, for people who aren't aware, can be a very lengthy and expensive process.
Correct. There are long waiting lists for professionals. Sometimes it took a year or even longer and cost thousands of dollars to get a diagnosis. And then once they had a diagnosis, the response was a sum of money. Then they had to go and find therapists. So that was one aspect of it. The second aspect was it distorted clinical practice. So diagnoses, sometimes they work for kids, but often they don't. So I'm a paediatrician. Children would be referred to me, not necessarily to assess strengths and weaknesses and make recommendations to parents. They came to me looking for a diagnosis of autism because that was the only way they could get services. So paediatricians, health professionals, parents were getting increasingly frustrated and agitated with this. And it didn't serve a lot of kids well. Parents were anxious about whether they'd get a diagnosis or not. Outcomes for kids wasn't measured in terms of their development, but the sum of money that they got. I think therapists often had a conflict of interest because parents have this view that if therapy once a week is good, twice a week must be even better. So the whole thing was just a real mess. And I think the minister realised this, and his first approach to me was he'd looked at it, at the scheme, and he thought it really needs to be reconceptualised. And I rapidly agreed. And that's what's happened. So we started this about 5 months ago. The final model and the report went to the minister just before Christmas. It was approved by Cabinet last Friday, and now there are serious negotiations with the states about funding and rollout.
So if, just on the diagnosis point, take the point that this is a lengthy and expensive process, but if there's no diagnosis required, who will decide under this model which children will receive support under Thriving Kids? Who is going to make that call?
Well, there's a whole reconceptualization of children's health development and behaviour. So I would say that all children and all families need some sort of support. At one end of the continuum, there are those families doing well, parents are confident, children are developing normally. What they need is advice about immunisation and injury prevention, etc. Mm. Then there's a continuum all the way through to children that have really serious complex conditions, parents that are struggling with information and getting resources, and everything in between. So The reconceptualization is very much a parent support preventive approach. Supporting parents. And that was the other problem with the NDIS, that the problem with the diagnosis is and treatment, it's focused on the child. What's wrong with the child? We have to fix the child. And the research is really clear that outcomes are largely determined not by the amount of therapy children have, by how confident the families feel about knowing what to do, how to develop a good environment.
Sure, but there will clearly be some kids, many kids, who are going to need more than just help on immunization. They're going to need that sort of speech pathology, occupational therapy, psychology. Who will decide whether they're going to receive those supports?
Well, let me take through the child's journey and I'll answer it this way. So we start off with parents. So one of the features of Thriving Kids is to make sure that parents have access to credible, evidence-based information around child development, around what to expect, and particularly the early signs that things aren't going on, aren't going to track, and then what to do, where to go. Then they go to childcare, they go to family daycare, they go to maternal and child health nurses, they go to GPs. So at each of those settings, we need to increase the skills and expertise of those professionals.
So the childcare workers and the teachers will need some expertise in determining what these children need.
Correct, and providing parents with information. So in many of these kids, I won't say most, but in many children, what parents need is advice around sleep problems or difficult behaviour or two-year-old temper tantrums, whatever it must be. Where the professional in each of those settings thinks a problem is more serious, there'll be targeted referrals. There'll be mapping of professionals working in this area. So a GP can make a referral, a community nurse can make a referral, a paediatrician can, but it'll be service specific. So for children that just have a delayed language, for example, they'll be referred to a speech therapist. They won't get a bucket of money because some of these kids just need one or two sessions. It won't be open-ended and then they're fine.
But there will be some kids who need more than one or two sessions, whether it's speech pathology or with a psychologist. So if a parent takes their kid to the GP, says, we're having these issues, the GP says, okay, you need to see a psychologist. What happens then? Who's going to pay for that service?
Hopefully the states will pay for the public ones. Some parents will be able to go privately. But remember, all these services existed before the NDIS. And what happened is many states took resources away from community-based public services in order to put them into the umbrella of the NDIS. So they're still there. And I think part of the negotiations, part of the bilaterals that the minister and the Commonwealth Department will be having with the states is to make sure that there are those resources in the community. So GPs can refer there, paediatricians can refer there.
But the states have got to do that. They've got to rebuild that architecture that existed before the NDIS.
And that'll vary state by state. In some states, it's almost there. And I think the negotiations will be around filling any gaps that might be there or enhancing ones already there. Other states may be starting off from a lower base. And those bilateral negotiations, my understanding, are taking place as we speak.
The Australian Association of Psychologists has concerns about this. They've said the proposed Thriving Kids model is risky, placing early identification of developmental delay in the hands of a non-health, non-clinical workforce. I guess they're talking about parents and childcare workers having to do this work. What do you say to that concern?
Well, that's not what the evidence suggests. The evidence suggests that parents are often the first people to identify that these children have problems. Then they need to go to professionals who look at these children according to the level of skills. So you wouldn't expect a childcare worker, for example, to have the same level of training and expertise and confidence to detect problems as you would a GP who's trained or a paediatrician. But it's got to be a settings approach. You know, we can't wait until problems become so severe that they deserve or they get a diagnosis. There are opportunities right along the life course from soon after birth for these children to be identified early and hopefully reducing stigma as well. So part of what we recommend is an awareness program so that We raise the general level of awareness in the community about the importance of early identification, early referral, and particularly support for parents, not just in raising children who are quote unquote normal, but being able to get help at the veriest earliest opportunity. The research is pretty clear. The earlier we identify these problems and the earlier we intervene, the better the outcomes.
Yeah, that, and that has a logic to it. But is there a danger that there are kids slipping through the cracks already, as we know it, who, you know, you might be in a childcare or school setting where the advice is, look, you know, just stick with it. Keep the child coming along to school and they'll get through this. How would that be avoided under Thriving Kids?
Yeah, look, that will always be a risk. We're relying a lot on the professional expertise of the various disciplines. I think we need to make sure that for each of those settings, childcare, community nurses, schools, preschools, etc., we make sure that the professionals there have the have the appropriate level of skills and expertise.
So it is an upskilling of the each of these settings, childcare, schools. So the states will have an obligation to really upskill that staff.
Well, the federal government has some control over childcare and over GPs. And I think the College of GPs is very keen, as they should be, for GPs to have an enhanced role because everybody visits a GP at some stage.
So they've got to have a better understanding of what to spot in kids with these low to moderate needs, where to refer them. This will involve really across the board reskilling of these workers.
Or upskilling.
Many
of these workers already have great expertise, but it's to make sure they have the confidence and the capability to do that. So from a research point of view, from a child development point of view, where we all want the best outcomes for kids, this approach of involving parents at the core, of making sure that we provide every opportunity for early detection, early referral, early support, it's an exciting time for those of us that have been advocating for a long time about intervening early, you know, investing early in children, because that'll affect their life course and you'll see better results as adults as well.
Can all of this upskilling be done in the time frame we're talking about here? I mean, if we're talking about an existing workforce of childcare workers, teachers and so on, will they have to undergo upskilling pretty rapidly for this to be in place?
I think all that's being negotiated now. I think it'll have to be co-designed with them. What we don't recommend is a single training program for all GPs or all childcare workers or all teachers. I think that has to be co-designed with the states themselves.
So that could take some time, couldn't it?
Yeah, this is not going to be finished in a year. I think what's important from our point of view is there's now an evidence-based framework that'll guide training, that'll guide expertise, that'll guide the child's journey as he or she goes through life.
And ultimately, you know, for families who can't afford to see a psychologist, it's going to require the state government, by the sounds of it, to have the willingness to pay for that.
Yeah, look, there are real workforce issues, and we identified those in our report, both in number and in expertise. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to have and that's not going to be solved within 12 months or even a couple of years.
This is all meant to be up and running fully, isn't it, within a couple of years?
Well, it'll be up and running in some form, but I think it'll just continue to evolve according to these guidelines. We consulted with the colleges and the professional associations, the Australian Psychological Society. They're aware of workforce shortages and they're aware that they've got to start changing their training to train more child psychologists, more speeches, etc.
So what you're saying, for this plan, this model to be fully envisaged is going to take more than a couple of years?
Well, yes, but it'll be up and running. It'll be a different model than NDIS. It'll be a much more welcome model. It'll decrease anxiety for parents. It'll provide opportunities for early intervention. It'll support parents. That'll be up and running according to the timeframes. The model will continue to evolve as we tackle workforce shortages, as we put in place training programs and so on.
How have parents responded to this model so far?
Well, some parents are anxious, which you'd expect because they're used to NDIS. I think the minister's made it clear that kids on NDIS now are not going to be taken away. Mm. We're talking about prospectively once the scheme starts. Some parents are anxious whether the kids will get the support that they need. A lot of parents, I suspect, are less anxious because they don't have to go chasing a diagnosis. Mm. They know that as soon as they have concerns, they'll get appropriate advice, appropriate guidance from trusted people, you know, whatever the professional is that they trust, the GP, a teacher, they'll get advice when they're anxious, not 12 months down the line when they go looking for a diagnosis.
And you mentioned the big anxiety for parents there that many have, you know, their kid's going to be booted off the NDIS. So just for clarity, the idea is that just won't happen. So if you've got a five-year-old who's currently receiving NDIS support, they're not going to be down the track removed from the NDIS?
Correct.
Okay. And does this mean different models operating in different states? Do you see a bit of a patchwork here of how exactly this works in practice, depending on the jurisdiction?
Yes, very much so. Look, we have, six states and two territories. Mm-hmm. So there'll be eight slightly different programs of services. The reality is we've got a federation, but they'll all adhere to the guidelines that we've established as part of the Thriving Kids report. You might have a green one here and a light blue one somewhere else, but the philosophy of supporting parents, picking up problems early, giving parents guidance, that'll be right across the board.
But does that mean you get better supports in some states than others?
Hopefully not. I think there are challenges for rural and remote, particularly in some states where there's a high concentration of rural and remote communities. That's always been a challenge and will remain a challenge. I think with technology and telehealth and so on, we can start to address that. But we have to make sure that there is equity right across the board, that every child in every community right across the country has equitable access to the sort of supports that they need.
And of course, the big fundamental difference between the NDIS and this Thriving Kids idea is that the family doesn't get a package of funding to spend on the services that they think their child needs.
Correct.
Why is that a concern for parents? Do you think they lose control over what they know their child needs? Do you think that's just too much of a waste at the moment?
Well, I would argue with that, David. I think lots of parents aren't quite sure what their child needs.
Right.
You know, I think parents are vulnerable. They want the right thing for their kids. They're vulnerable to being pointed in this direction and that direction without a bucket of money to spend. And as I said before, parents regard outcomes in terms of the money they've got and how much therapy time they can buy. So this is not a therapy model. This is not a treatment model. This is a prevention model. Mm. I think hopefully parents will get the right guidance from the professionals that they see. We said before, GPs, nurses, paediatricians, they'll be directed to the services they need in the quantities they need. And all of those will be high quality because we'll have increased the expertise of all those disciplines.
Look, ultimately, this is driven by the desire to rein in that growing cost of the NDIS. I think it's about 11% of all 5 to 7 year olds last year were on the NDIS, and about 40% are there with a diagnosis of autism. What sort of difference do you expect this will make on that front?
David, we did not discuss finances for one second in our deliberations. We ignored that. We ignored the bilaterals with the states. We ignored the cost completely. The expert advisory group, which was made up of professionals from each of the disciplines that are working with children, plus people with shared experience, plus people that ran these services for children with additional needs. We did deep dives, so we consulted very, very widely outside the expert advisory group. We took advice from the parliamentary health group chaired by Mike Freelander and Monique Ryan. Very, very extensive consultation. In none of those consultations did we talk about money.
So you're saying this was not driven at all by money. It's about better outcomes for kids entirely.
The expert advisory group focused only on better outcomes. When the minister approached me to co-chair this, he didn't say, look for ways of saving money. He said to me, let's develop the very best conceptual model for kids. And that's what we did.
Well, Professor Frank Oberclay, we really appreciate you talking through what is a significant change for many, many families in this Thriving Kids. And we'll be fascinated to see how it progresses from here. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
And thanks for your company this week. We'll have more on this Sunday. Hope you can join us for Insiders at 9 a.m. on ABC TV.
making us all feel very excited about being here.